Hi, I'm Taylor Smurl, and I'm an experienced bartender.
And I'm Tommy Smurl. I'm an experienced drinker.
He's my dad, and together this is...
Neat! A weekly booze cast.
With history lessons, trivia, and a twist.
So pull up a stool to the bar and join us for the lowdown on your highball.
Hello and welcome back. Hey Dad, how you doing?
Good, Tay. A little soggy, but doing good. Other than that, went from a heat wave to a tidal wave.
You're getting the remains of Ida coming through, I guess?
Yeah, Ida's been knocking on our door. We had a storm come through first. And it dumped 4 inches of rain in 30 minutes. And then we had Ida follow that up. It started on us today. Now, it's not really a storm. It's just a steady rain.
Well, last time we recorded, I was recovering, or we were getting out from under, how is it pronounced?
Henri. Yeah.
Yeah. I kept calling it Henry like an idiot.
It is a French Henry.
French Henry, yes. So I guess this is just, we're going to talk about the new... Usually, it's not odd to talk about the weather at the start of every podcast, but now we're just talking about the hurricane that's happening.
Yeah.
We live in these times. I hope everybody down in Louisiana, down south, that's been affected by Ida is doing all right. I know things are a little touch and go down there right now, so you're in our thoughts.
You know, we had all these videos of, because our streets, they're just not made to take 4 inches of rain in 30 minutes. And we had streets flooded that I've never seen in the 60 years that I've lived here. I've never seen rain to that extent and flooding. And we had people wading through the water almost waist deep at some places. And the one thing I was glad we didn't have to worry about that I saw they do down in Louisiana, they're wading through the water and a guy got attacked by an alligator.
Oh, my God.
Because they've got gators down there. And so when all these swamplands get overrun with the water, they wash them right into the towns and everything. So you're wading through this water, and hell, them alligators will sneak up on you.
That's terrifying.
I know.
Of everything else you have to be worried about right now down south, I'm sorry that gators are among them.
Yeah, really.
But in all seriousness, you're in our thoughts. I hope everybody... is going to come out the other side of this okay. Climate change, hey.
You think it's real?
Yes, I do. I think it's evidenced. I think when every hurricane season is, well, this is going to be supposed to be the best or the worst hurricane season ever, and it's every year we say that, I think that means something, right?
We're building towards something, aren't we?
Yeah, I keep thinking, like, how bad Sandy was up here in New York, and I just, like, New York's not built for any of that, you know? There's a lot you have to contend with in New York, but we didn't plan for storms.
No, hurricanes you think of is down on the southern coast, you know, either on going up the east side of the Florida Panhandle or coming into the Gulf on the west side.
This is the future. Hey, sorry, that's heavy. But we'll redirect you.
Hey, you know something I saw that I thought was pretty funny. Funny, ironic. After we did our episode about tipping and, you know, and all that kind of stuff having to do with your waiters and waitresses and bar staff and all that, there was a TikTok that went viral this week of waitress, I guess, that was saying, here's what you do when you have a rude 20 person table or something like that. And she was showing pushing the autograt,
yeah.
It was an automatic 20% that was added onto the tab.
Oh, yeah.
And so it, I guess this was on Reddit or something. And so but they said the people were split on whether that was right or not. and they were saying, "Oh, so you think you should be able to penalize people because they're not paying you extra just for doing your job?" And I'm like, "Man, you need to listen to our episode. I think you'd have a different view on that, about that being extra. That's not extra. When you don't even make minimum wage, that's not extra."
No, and I mean, autograd is often, like, it's usually listed at the bottom of the menu that, like, parties of X many people or more will be charged an automatic gratuity. Like, that's legal. You have to state it, but it is legal to do that. So the server is not doing anything wrong by autograding a party. If anything, it's usually the question if you don't autograd is, will they tip me a higher percentage if I don't autograt them, or should I leave it up to the autograt? Because a lot of times, I mean, some businesses will set autograts like a little lower than what you'd want. They'll set it like 18%. So you have to play this game. Is like, is 2% worth risking my 18%? Like,
yeah,
it's not. If you get autograted, it's not a personal thing against you. It's probably policy or just a server protecting their butt.
Well, I think probably they have it on there, but it's up to the server's discretion as to whether they do it or not. I mean, they have the option of not pressing that button or something, I guess.
Yeah, but the default is to do it. So I think it's, of course, in that situation, if you've got a rude party, you are very grateful for the autograt. Because it's like, there's only so much I can do. 20%, yeah. Thank you.
Well, my thought was the 50% that thought that wasn't right, I wish that they could have heard our episode, and I think maybe they might have a different opinion about what tipping is. Tipping is not excessive. Tipping is just getting people by.
Exactly. You can have, however unfair you think the system is, you can't blame the people that are caught up in it.
No, they don't. That's just the way the game is played, and you know, it probably wouldn't hurt if they changed the rules of that game, but the restaurant lobby, I guess, is pretty strong.
Yeah. Like I said, I agree. I'm not for doing away with tipping. I'm for a livable minimum wage and no subminimum. That's
exactly
the first step, you know.
Yeah, I say do away with the subminimum and start from there.
I mean, there are plenty of countries that have no sub-minimum wage. They don't have the culture, and tipping still happens. People still tip for excellent service. Mm-hmm. Not unheard of.
That's right.
I think we like to pat ourselves in the back, like, but we tip here. It's like, no, lots of countries tip. Not everybody makes their service staff reliant on tips.
Yeah.
But, hey. After all of that heavy talk, I think everybody needs a drink, huh?
Well, why not? That's what we talk about.
That's what we talk about. I thought this week we could talk about, Dad, I know it's one of your recently discovered favorite cocktails.
Absolutely. I mean, I never really had a favorite cocktail. I pretty much stuck with beer, as I've stated time and time again on here. But once we made that whiskey sour that time, man, that has become my favorite drink. That's my go-to, and I keep the stuff on hand for that. Anytime that I'm restocking the bar.
Well, I'm very happy that you found a cocktail that you enjoy. That makes me feel very proud and happy.
Well, you did a good job. That's a good one.
Well, I think it's also a superior cocktail to choose. It's an excellent cocktail with a long history. So nowadays we're talking about the whiskey sour. The whiskey sour is a, is if you order in a bar today, you're going to get probably somewhere around 2 ounces of either of bourbon or rye. They'll probably ask you your preference. You know, 3/4 ounce lemon, 3/4 ounce simple syrup. It's a classic sour build. You might get an egg white if you want one. Might come with a cherry, might come with a lemon, might have some ango in there. But that's the sort of the boundaries of what a whiskey sour is nowadays.
Yeah, and it's just smooth and cold and refreshing.
Yeah, it's like concentrated whiskey lemonade.
Yeah, I mean, I try to just sip them and make it last, but it goes down too easy. It's like before I know it, well, that one's gone. Now I got to go make another one.
Well, it's funny because it definitely tastes like the spirit. Like the better whiskey you use, I think the better drink you make. And it's not necessarily the best cocktail for hiding super bad whiskey.
Well, that's
you
true.
You definitely taste it.
And I think a lot of times the whiskey sour gets a bad reputation if you go in like a dive bar and they're using well drink ingredients. And then if you've never had one, you get one, you say, oh, that's not a very good drink. Yeah. But if you get one, and it's not like you got to buy top shelf stuff.
No.
I mean, you know, what's that old Overholt that we...
Yeah. Oh, that's, yeah, Overholt. It's a $20 bottle of rye, but makes a great whiskey sour.
Yeah. I mean, that's, I think every one I've made, that's what I've used, and it tastes great.
Yeah. You go any lower shelf than that, you get like the whiskey that's just whiskey, no designation. It might get questionable.
Old granddad.
Well, I think old granddad might even make an okay one. It's not completely unforgiving as a build, but...
Some of the people that I saw walking out with old granddad in a brown bag, I thought, well, that can't be that good of stuff looking at the clientele that's buying it.
I don't know. Some people just, they know what they like. I mean, honestly, I think a lot of people feel that way about old Overholt until you try it, you know? It's really, as we've explored, there are some really cheap bottles of booze that just happen to be, they're well made. They just are pretty simple. So it's just, you know, probably also made by like somewhat ethical distilleries that aren't interested in charging you an extra $30 just because they have like a hipster label.
Well, that's fine with me because I am not one of those kind of people that, you know, decides what I'm going to drink by, I want the most expensive bottle. Believe me, if there's a cheap bottle that will taste decent, that's the one I want.
Now, when it comes to whiskey, I'm like Four Roses, bourbon, Old Overholt rye, Mellow Corn if I want something kind of spicy and weird, and if I want a scotch, Monkey Shoulder is fine. It's also like, I think it's like a $30-some bottle. It's a blended scotch. But yeah, there are plenty of good things in the cheaper varietal that aren't going to make your drinks bad. They're there, and you're not going to pay much less for them than the good stuff. But I digress. Let's get into some history. Where's our dear whiskey sour from in origin? It took quite a trip to get here, to your glass, Dad. Some might say a voyage, a long sea voyage, precisely.
And it came from the British?
Well, not exactly. The British founded it, like they found a lot of stuff that was already there. So see, the origins of the whiskey sour and the sour build in general can really, a lot of alcohol historians trace it back to historical punch, which finds its roots most plausibly actually in India. There's the Hindi word pank, which means five, and that's referenced as a common drink found there by English sailors in the 17th century. So this punch, this early punch, consisted of five ingredients: alcohol, sugar, juice, either lime or lemon, and water and spices. So this was already a thing in India. Members of the East India Trading Company that came to India, it encountered this punch, and what they found is that those scurvy-stricken sailors were cured by this punch. So somebody who made note of that historically was Vice Admiral Edward Vernon of England, who started mixing a simplified version of this to serve to his sailors. So he would combine the liquor that they had available, be it rum or gin, some water, some sugar, some citrus, and he would provide it to his sailors, and it would keep them hydrated and not too drunk and free of scurvy on the high seas.
That was the grog, huh?
Yeah, so the beverage became known as grog, and it was named actually after Vernon because Vernon wore this cloak that was made of grogram, which is the fabric it was made out of. So they would call Vernon Old Grog, so they nicknamed the beverage that he made for them grog. So if you've ever heard the term grog, that's where it comes from. So it is, the British popularized it, but they didn't invent it. This was a long-existing balance of flavors that comes from Indian culture.
And they had to use the alcohol in there instead of water because they couldn't keep the water okay. The water would go bad, but the alcohol would the alcohol would last.
Exactly. It solved a lot of problems because, yes, it was safe to imbibe. It wasn't diseased. But also, there's other things in there that are diluting it. You know, you've got... some modicum of water to dilute it. You've got citrus in there, and obviously the alcohol. So you're not getting quite as drunk as you would be on just getting a straight, you know, dram of rum every day. And obviously you've got the citrus for scurvy. So really, really was a good combo of things for the British Navy at the time.
Yeah, there you go. It's medicinal purposes. That's the history of drinks. Everything. It got, all comes back to it was medicine at some point before it became popular in the bars.
This has been Sawbones all along.
Yeah.
Now, this idea, though, of sugar, sour, booze, water, this obviously caught on in the bar world. Like, as you mentioned, most of our earliest cocktails came from medicinal applications, but they were usually like simple modifications. So you had a base spirit with bitters, aperitifs, digestives. All of these things come to us from medical applications, right? That's where we got bitters. That's where we got distilled spirits. That's where we got aperitifs. That's where we got digestives. So the sour was kind of a new, exciting, popular style to be introduced to like the pre-prohibition bartender pantheon, right? And it brought in a couple new ingredients. It was a new idea. So caught on all around the world. You know, the English opted for gin and brandy. Those were the spirits they mainly had on hand. You know, you had some rum. But of course, in America, what did we have plenty of in like the 17th, 18th century? We had whiskey. Now, the first printed mention of a sour on a menu actually doesn't come from America. It comes from Canada in 1856. There was a list that was discovered of 107 cocktails that were offered at the Mart Ackerman Saloon in Canada, and the whiskey sour was one of them.
Wow.
But, yeah, so now they were probably, you know, they came ashore around the 17th century. They were probably being mixed and consumed all throughout, but the first written recipe we get is actually in 1862, and that is in the very important seminal bar book by Jerry Thomas, The Bartender's Guide, The Whiskey Sour in Origin. The recipe reads, you use a small bar glass, you take one large teaspoon of powdered white sugar dissolved in a little seltzer, the juice of half or a small lemon, and one wine glass of bourbon or rye whiskey. So that's the original recipe. Very simple. Some powdered sugar dissolved in a little water, some lemon juice, and some bourbon or rye.
And it said to ornament it with berries.
Yes. Not something you'd necessarily see now.
No. Yeah, because we used a lemon, didn't we?
A cherry is classic. I feel like a lemon is what you get at a lot of bars as well. Like, I think either one is fine. So usually you'll get both, actually. Like, a lemon and a cherry is what I see most often. But
you know,
berries,
they used
no.
one other term in there I didn't understand. When it said that Apollinaris water or something like that. I don't, is that some kind of seltzer or tonic type water?
Oh yeah, that is, that Apollinaris water is just a specific type of German seltzer water.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah. So, and you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of times, and I was taught that the classic whiskey sour had an egg white, and that seltzer is one of those things that's like a horrible abomination that was brought in like in, you know, like the 80s or something. So it is funny that the original recipe by Jerry Thomas calls for a little seltzer or a little bubbly water. It's just there to dissolve the sugar, of course. It's just there to make an instant simple syrup. I think it is interesting, especially that the first recipe didn't call for that egg white. Now, egg whites are fashionable around this time in the mid to late 1800s, and many like immediately subsequent printed recipes include the egg white. So it's not, it came about around the same time, and probably just from a matter of like seltzer doesn't really maintain its bubble structure when you shake it, obviously, whereas egg whites create even more bubbles when you shake it. So it was just more of a natural progression of the original recipe.
Well, I never put egg whites in mine. I just make them without that part. I'm kind of mixed on whether I'd want to try one with an egg white. I like the way they are, and I figure, you know, why tamper with it? If it's good, stick with it.
I still don't know where I fall on egg white cocktails. Obviously, now I'm a vegan. I can't have them even if I wanted them. We have substitutes like aquafaba, but I don't know. Having switched to like the whiskey sour without one, I think I prefer it. I like it a little bit more bracing, a little less caustic. Like egg whites don't have a taste, but they do have a texture, which is nice and creamy, but they do have a bit of a tactile quality, which is a little bit chalky. And I don't know if I want that in my drink all the time. It's, you know, it's, I think it's a preference thing more than anything. There's not a right or wrong way. It's just preference.
But the egg white is an optional ingredient. It's a good drink whether you add that or not.
Yes. And I think if you're at a cocktail bar that has egg whites, not every bar is going to have egg whites. I don't think that's something you can't always expect. It's even sort of a workaround as far as like food health safety. Like that is not really allowed to put a raw egg in your drink. Plenty of bars do it, but it's not really... It's perfectly safe. Like, the likelihood of you getting salmonella from an egg white in your cocktail is so absurdly low. But just because of the way that the, like, you know, the health board works, we're not really allowed to do it. So some bars hold fast and strong to that and just don't do it. But, you know, I think a good bartender that has that will ask you, do you want an egg white or no? Do you want bourbon or rye?
So probably if you want to order an egg white whiskey sour, you'd be best to order it at a Denny's or a Waffle House where they do a lot of eggs.
No, I don't actually, you know, I don't know. Maybe Denny's has like a secret speakeasy, you know, like you go through, I don't know. There's like one of those spinning pie things that you like push the right panel on and it opens a door. And there's, I would love to work there. Denny's speakeasy, hire me. just maple syrup old fashions. I think it'd be great.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah. Now, one thing that is, it's a sort of a funny terminology as we talk about egg whites. Sometimes you'll hear the whiskey sour with an egg white referred to as a Boston sour. It's not like one of those, like, there's a right and wrong way to refer to it. A whiskey sour can and cannot have egg whites. A Boston sour is usually defined by the presence of egg whites, but that's not a term that I've heard often enough that I think it's like always true.
Yeah, or that you could walk in and order one even in a cocktail bar and it would know you're a Boston sour. What?
Yeah. I think it's kind of like, it's the difference between, I don't know, sort of like with a martini. If you order a Gibson martini, that's the martini with a little onion, right? If you order a Gibson martini and the bartender doesn't know what you mean, like, you can always just say, I want a martini with a cocktail onion. Like, it's one of those things. Like, it's a whiskey sour with an egg white. There's not that big of a modification on it, so it's fine to order it that way. If you try the term Boston sour and it works, I don't know, maybe if you're in Boston, it goes farther. Who knows?
Yeah, they probably know about it in Boston.
They probably. It's got their name. But the Boston sour, it originates in a similar timeline to the whiskey sour. That shows up in print in 1892 in William Schmidt's The Flowing Bowl. So that's the first mention of this. And it is just that. It is a whiskey sour with an egg white.
Well, and you've got one named after your hometown.
Which is interesting. Yes, there is the New York sour. That came about in the 1880s. But interestingly enough, it was claimed to be the invention of a Chicago bartender. So the New York sour was invented in Chicago.
Why well, that's it got not the name? Right.
No, it got the name New York sour just because it was apparently introduced to a Manhattan bartender by a customer from Chicago. And it got so popular in New York that people started calling it, oh, I want that New York sour. And that's so sorry, bartender from Chicago. We stole your drink. But it is just a classic whiskey sour with the addition of a float of red wine. Sort of a whiskey sour sangria. I've had them before. They can be nice. It's a fun concept.
That combination doesn't sound great to me.
If you're a wine drinker, if you like sangria, if you like sort of that tannic bitterness, it's a fun layer on top of it. I will also say visually it's a very beautiful drink because you float the red wine on top of the sour. So you want a very clear delineation. You've got your little, like, you know, yellow orange at the bottom. You've got your deep red at the top. It's very beautiful to look at. And I think if you like wine and you like wine cocktails, you might dig it. But I still like the sour as it is.
It's like the tequila sunrise of sours.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's like the red wine's not doing much, but it is there. You are drinking through it every time you get to that sour, so you gotta like it. But of course, our innovation on the whiskey sour would be cut short by, of course, what else? Prohibition. As we hit prohibition in America, we see the great diminishing of good whiskey, and by proxy, good whiskey cocktails. More dominant mixers and syrups become popular to hide the taste of bathtub booze, and like the classic whiskey basically just fell out of favor. And it was too reliant on the base spirit to be all that good when it was very rough, like hot white whiskey we were dealing with. And it would only, matters would only be made worse with after Prohibition. Of course, we have the war. A lot of distilleries are still being used for the war effort. And then we roll right into like the 50s, you know, into the era where everything is pre-made, instant, you know, the TV dinner modernization time period. And all in this sort of rage, we come up with one of the worst ingredients to ever be invented behind a bar. And that is sour mix. Sour mix, yes. So the idea behind it is, well, why bother having to squeeze these lemons or limes and use this, you know, either sugar or make a sugar syrup when we can just put them together with some flavorings and preservatives and a bunch of chemicals and make them shelf stable or reduce them to a syrup and shoot them out of a soda gun. Sour mix. That's just a sin against classic bartending. So for several decades following this, of course, if you ordered a whiskey sour at a bar, you would have gotten, like, as you were talking about earlier, Dad, you would have gotten some well whiskey with a big old pour of sour mix. Maybe like a bright red maraschino cherry would have been thrown in there if you're lucky. And that just sort of paved the way for a lot of sort of cloyingly sweet variants. You know, this is where we get the amaretto sour kind of birthed alongside of it.
Yeah. So just because you got a whiskey sour at some point doesn't mean that you actually got a good whiskey sour.
Yes. Especially if we're talking like late 80s, early 90s. There's still bars out there that don't have fresh juice and syrup that have sour mix on the gun. And, you know, as I've said before, like, I think it's fine. I'm totally fine with those being bars that exist forever. Not every bar needs to be a cocktail bar. But learning the difference is good. It will benefit you. If you're at a bar with fresh juice and fresh syrups and you've only had one of those dive bar whiskey sours, I think you owe it to yourself to give it another try where your bartender can make it right.
Well, I mean, you know, it says it was right at the top of one of the most popular drinks from the 1860s through the 1960s. So it had to be doing something right, you know. And then you say, well, why did it drop off in the 1960s? Well, maybe that's why, because we started coming up with all these ways to simplify everything and mass produce them and stuff like that. And maybe that's when the sour mixes started making it so it wasn't really as desirable a drink, but everybody felt like they had to do that to keep up.
Yeah. Well, and you know, you compound that with the other thing that happened in like the 60s and into the 70s is when you have like sort of the youth revolting against their, you know, I guess what their yuppie parents who all had their three martini lunches and their Manhattans, like specifically whiskey, like brown spirits fell out of favor because it was sort of like that was the man's drink. So whiskey took a big hit through that. Classic bartending ingredients took a big hit through that. So it was really just like a 1-2 punch for the whiskey sour.
And gave birth to Zima.
And, well, yeah, like, you know, that's when we move into the, not even gin, we went into vodka. Like that's where vodka and Alka Pops and instant mixers, every kind of pucker, like just the darkest days of bartending. But
Mad Dog 2020.
But of course, this was all reversed as we hit the cocktail revival of the late 90s. This is in America, of course. I say this because bartenders were making delicious sours in other parts of the world throughout all of this. This is just the American timeline for this.
Right.
But in the 90s in America, we had the sort of cocktail revival, fresh juices and house-made syrups returned to the bar. Bartenders are being educated on classic bartending structures, of which the sour is one of the most essential. And they finally start to revive these simple and classic descendants of, really, the punch is one of the world's first cocktails, you could argue. And so here is this whiskey sour, this descendant of one of the first cocktails. And of course, innovation follows that. One of my favorites, it's also very simple, but I think one of the best. It's from one of those bars that really kicked off the cocktail revolution. That was New York's Milk and Honey. Bartender T.J. Siegel was working on a honey syrup, and he subbed in honey syrup for simple syrup in a classic whiskey sour, added some bitters, shook it up, and he created the Gold Rush. Gold Rush is a incredibly simple mod on a classic whiskey sour. I think it's delicious. It's wonderful. Just goes to show that, like, you know, when you have, you don't need to have 10 ingredients in a cocktail to make a fancy, cool cocktail. You can just know a classic enduring structure, make a simple, smart modification on it, and invent something that will become a classic. By, like, this was, you know, we're only talking like the, you know, early 2000s. And I would say you could walk into most good cocktail bars in America, ask for a Gold Rush, and most bartenders would know that, which I think is really cool considering how long it took for some of these cocktails to, like, enter into the vernacular. Like, that's a recent addition that now it's not just a regional thing. It's something that most bartenders, at least in America, could make.
Yeah, it's a very versatile drink. You can kind of play around with it. If there's things you like, you're just working with that sweet versus sour combination, and you can use some different things. So, like, I thought it was interesting. The one that I came across, a variant of it, was Ward 8. And it says you can use bourbon or rye and use both lemon and orange juices mixed together. And then grenadine syrup as a sweetener instead of the simple syrup. So I thought that might be something that I might want to try. That sounds pretty good.
Yeah. No, the Ward 8's a good cocktail. And, I mean, it is. It's really that simple understanding of balance, and, you know, I follow generally with sours the 2 3/4 3/4 formula, but a lot of these, there's also that simple balance of, like, maybe you've got a slightly drier sweetener, so you're gonna up it a little bit, you know, maybe you want to lower your citrus a little bit, maybe if you've got a rye versus a bourbon, you use a little bit more sweet because the rye's a little drier. There's lots of tiny little, like, tinkering that you can do with the classic whiskey sour when you sub in one ingredient for another that I think is really fun and nuanced. Mm-hmm. So you don't need to have, like, split base, three modifiers, herbs, like a house-made syrup, like all this stuff.
Right.
It's really just look at this good formula, move the little levers up and down as you adjust for flavors.
Yeah.
And come up with something fun and delicious. It's a classic for a reason. It stood the test of time. It survived wars and prohibition and all sorts of stuff. It's still here, still delicious.
I said that it's three pillar construction of base spirit, sugar, and citrus was a template that provided the blueprint for countless classics like the margarita and the daiquiri.
Yeah, I mean, that's that. The margarita is a playoff like a daisy, but I think that the daisy is, yes, the sour predates the daisy. So this idea of, like, we have sort of subcategories of cocktails, but by and large, this and it all derives from that idea of punch, right? Because even if we go back to that original idea, when we throw bitters in there, so if bitters are our spice, water is our ice, and then we've got citrus, sweet, and booze. So we're still doing that. We're still doing that punch. It's just single serving. And it's the one of, like I said, the oldest understandings of how to build a drink in the world, and enduring and classic and incredibly versatile.
Yeah. And as we've mentioned, sometimes these drinks being in popular culture, there's a quote from The 7-Year Itch. Have you ever heard of the movie The 7-Year Itch?
Oh yeah.
That's a famous Marilyn Monroe movie.
Yeah.
And in it, the main character that's in there is a guy named Richard Sherman, and he says, "I'm perfectly capable of fixing my breakfast. As a matter of fact, I had a peanut butter sandwich and two whiskey sours."
That sounds pretty good to me, actually.
They say it was a favorite, too, of Hemingway and Fitzgerald, that they were ones that both loved a good whiskey sour.
Of course, Hemingway liked it. Hemingway liked everything.
except for the one he threw at the wall.
Is that a bad julep?
I think that's what it was. That's not a mint julep.
Made mint julep. He also wouldn't claim the mojito, as we learned.
That's right. No, put that on me.
Got a problem with mint, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, or somehow
like the whiskey sour.
Somehow he got associated with them. I did see a version of a whiskey sour that involved mint, but it looked way too complicated. It had mint and some different things, and you had to muddle it up in lime juice. And I said, well, that looks like we're getting away from the basic concept there. I don't want to know that one.
I do like to play the game on when I look at other bar menus of like, what is this really? And a lot of what those complicated like 5, 6, 7, 8 ingredient cocktails are modified sours. Like that is half of a lot of these, you know, $18-$20 cocktail menus. It's like you got a base spirit, you've got a simple syrup with some bells and whistles, you've got a citrus, and then they've thrown in some mint or some fruit, some weird bitters, you know, maybe a top of soda or of something, a tonic. But it's really just, in essence, it is a sour that you've made complicated, which I think is fine. Like, that's innovation. That's fine. I still always follow the rule that if you're going to complicate something, if your complicated version of it isn't better than the simple version of it, then you didn't do something better. you just did something harder. So, over on the video, we're getting back on those this week. A little behind on those. My editing software has been a little fun. Sorry about that. But we'll get back to the videos this week. And we're going to be making you some classic whiskey sours, some very simple modifications on those that I do think follow the rule of they are, I would say, at least as good, if not better. So we'll try those out.
That sounds good.
I know you'll enjoy this episode, Dad.
Yeah, anytime I can drink a whiskey sour, that's all right.
There you go.
There's not going to be any question about that.
Yeah, and if you like whiskey, or really just you like a good cocktail, I would definitely suggest checking out the video this week because it's a classic for a reason.
Well, we better go back and pick up a Red Stripe episode, even if it's just watching me drink one, because I like those too.
That's going to be. Yeah. No, we got to get that one in there. I was like, I don't really know what we can do other than just drink Red Stripe. And you were like, that's fine.
I'm okay. There you go. This is a Red Stripe. This is what it looks like. This is in a bottle. This is in a can. Both of them are drinkable. I'll drink it now and demonstrate.
Yeah. I don't know. I was like, we talked about ginger beer. We could do something with ginger beer. Or maybe I'll do something with ginger beer and you can just drink Red Stripe. Sounds fine, right?
All right.
Well, hey, thanks, Dad. Thanks for joining me here.
Glad to be here. Talking about one of my favorite subjects.
There you go. Thank you to everybody out there listening, especially to our Patreons. Thank you for supporting us. If you would like to support us, we have a Patreon, we have rewards, we've got coasters and stickers, they are coming out shortly, so those of you in the club, look out for those. Speaking of clubs, we also have a bespoke cocktail club where you get specially made cocktails by me and Dad. Those videos are exclusive to our Patreon, just at the $1 level, so you don't have to pay much to see those. If you're interested, you can check all that out. If you want to find us on our socials, we are Neat Boozecast on Instagram and Twitter. We are neattheboozecast@gmail.com. If you'd like to email us, any questions, any comments. Thank you so much for joining us. And of course, you can check us out on our YouTube channel for our videos.
And Facebook at Neat the Boozecast group.
All right. That's Dad's baby.
Yeah, I know how to find it.
Good job. Proud of you. All right. Well, hey, I've been Taylor Smurl.
I've been Tommy Smurl.
And this has been
Me. All right, now, after talking about them, I gotta go up and mix one up. I hope I didn't eat up all the lemons already.
I had enough to make one, and I made it last for this entire episode. I'm very proud of myself.
Well, you nursed it well.
I did.